Welcome to the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. Shaping Portsmouth is a collaboration of key Portsmouth businesses, transforming Portsmouth together.
We're back, and we're back on our education pillar. To keep things moving forward, to give you an update on the work that's been done, I'd like to welcome to the stage Hayden, and he'll be joined by a very inspirational young person. Maheep Kaur, who is Portsmouth's current member of the UK Youth Parliament.
Thanks, Yvonne. Wow, what a morning we've had. So many incredible young people being showcased to our city. So much so that I found my eyes leaking a bit for some reason. It's been quite inspirational, and we really are a city that cares deeply about young people and young people's voices. There's one incredibly inspiring young woman on the stage with me today, and that's Maheep. Maheep is our current member of Youth Parliament for the UK, and I think that this is the perfect opportunity to reflect on your journey. So Maheep's term is coming to an end. And she's done an incredible job fulfilling quite a difficult and tough job. But I want to start by asking, what impact are you really proud of that you've achieved or the Portsmouth Youth Cabinet have achieved over the last year?
Hello, everyone. I would say the impact that I'm most proud of is bringing young people together through the unity of Portsmouth Youth Cabinet and raising awareness, most importantly.
And what are the issues, Maheep, that that you've been most passionate about? What are the things that you've been determined to drive forward?
I was, during the last term of Portsmouth Youth Cabinet, I was part of the crime and safety subgroup, and I did a lot of workshops and work through the UK Youth Parliament during the conferences and stuff, and I really enjoyed it. And I also got to know a lot of differences between Portsmouth and the other cities in UK, and how we can like work together, and we also identified a lot of differences that are common in the cities. So yeah,
you've been an absolutely fabulous advocate for collaboration, not just in terms of bringing young people together from every background in the city, but also with our neighbouring towns and cities as well. And you must be really proud of the Portsmouth Youth Cabinet's climate summit. This is the first climate summit organised by young people, for young people, advocating for action. What difference has it made to you personally?
Most importantly, and the biggest thing that I learned through my MYP journey was like that I understood not everybody has same opinions, and we need to be respectful to others' opinions. So the biggest thing that I learned is taking and dealing with challenging or conflicting opinions respectfully, because I think that matters a lot. So yeah, that's something I really like. That's the biggest part of my journey that I learned, yeah.
That's incredible. And in today's day and age, we need to learn to disagree well. You know, we live in a world where we've become increasingly tribalistic. So that is an amazing insight that you've garnered there. So there's a new MYP about to be elected. We're about to kick off the elections for Portsmouth's Member of Youth Parliament. What legacy or message do you want to pass on to them?
I hope for them to keep standing up for themselves and their peers and not to give up, and just realise that they are making a big difference and they matter and their peers matter. So yeah.
On that note, can we please give Maheep a massive round of applause, please? Maheep, if you want to grab a seat for me. Now we move to an intergenerational conversation. So I'm going to invite two other incredible women to the stage. So could we please welcome the wonderful Theo from the Portsmouth Youth Cabinet. Can we give a round of applause for Theo? I've just seen from Theo's top that she attended the best school in Portsmouth, Amber Lord Nelson. And we are also very lucky to welcome the wonderful Amanda Martin, MP. Okay, good stuff. So let's kick off, Amanda. What are the best, and I want the honest truth here, what is the best and the worst parts of being the MP for Portsmouth North?
Well, before I say that, I just want to say thank you to Mihi for such an amazing job this year. You've been a real advocate for young people, and if you, any of you know young people, they really should start to apply for the positions and be part of the Youth Parliament, because it's such a great thing to do. So let's start with the worst. I miss my kids. When they are grown up, and they don't like to be called kids, but the job is 7 days a week. My eldest son is in the Navy, and when he's away at sea, he says every day's a Monday. And I think when you're an MP, and often a councillor as well, every day is a Monday, because you're in Parliament from Monday morning till Thursday night. Monday night votes start at 10 o'clock at night, so 20 minutes of vote, often leaving around 11:45 earliest. So I think that's the hardest part, is like missing my family and my kids. The best part is representing the city where everybody I love lives. Like, everybody I love lives in this city, and it is an absolute honour and privilege. I was a teacher for 24 years before being privileged to be an MP, and that was fantastic. It's still the very best profession in the world. But, yeah, getting to represent where the place where everyone I love lives.
I love that. We'll go to Theo next for the next question.
All right, so when did you first know you wanted to be a Member of Parliament?
I'm not sure I knew when I wanted to be a Member of Parliament, but I knew when I wanted to make some changes, and I'm going to be political because I'm a politician. When I was a teacher, in my opinion, Michael Gove trashed primary education, trashed secondary education when he removed 30% speaking and listening from our English GCSEs. That meant that young people, particularly in this city, weren't able to use the skills they had around their speaking and listening to gain that grade of GCSE that they were able to do, and the things that he put in place, and there's so many changes that he made. And having been a teacher for that time, you get to the point and you think, I can only make so many changes in the classroom. If you're going to do something, you've got to go and do something about it. And so that's when I decided to kind of throw my hat into the ring to be a Member of Parliament.
Amazing. The second question we have got for you is, what GCSEs and A-levels would you recommend taking for a career in politics?
I mean, I came in late. I was 50 years old when I became a Member of Parliament. And I just think my advice would be to study GCSEs and A-levels, or BTEC or V-levels as they're going to be. Study what you love, study what you're good at, because actually you're better off getting the very best grades at what you're good at. And actually politics is about, in my opinion, being a rounded person. I never went, when I did my A-levels, I wanted to be a journalist and wasn't able to get a journalism job. It was in the 90s when it was pretty tough. And so I thought, oh, well, let's go and see what teaching is like. And it just kind of found me. So, and then went into politics a little bit later. So my advice would be to do what you're good at, what you enjoy, because that gives you the best grades.
That's great, thank you. And linking on to that, how do you become a Member of Parliament?
Well, I think, you know, obviously I'm a Labour Party member and a Labour Party politician, but whatever you know, in this real world of politics, you do need to probably be a member of a party to be able to be, particularly if a member of parliament. So find the party that fits you. I would say find campaigns, find causes, find passionate things that you're passionate about. Work with your party or work with other community groups to get change in that, and from that point of view, and then go from there. You do also need money. I know when I was first selected, and being a teacher, having to do an Avon round to, like, in order to live with three kids, first thing that my tiny little two people campaign team said to me is, you got to raise 10 grand, Amanda, before you do anything. So it's about going out there, kind of pimping yourself out, like, oh, anyone want to, like, donate some funds? Anyone want to be able to do this? Can we do a fundraiser? And before I became anything involved with the Labour Party, I used to have money in my pockets. Now I have raffle tickets, because that's what you end up doing in going to all these places. So, yeah.
Lovely. What do you think about the voting age being lowered to 16?
I am actually 100% for it. And interestingly, I was really privileged yesterday to meet with the Malaysian Youth Parliament in Parliament and to talk to them about our democracy, slightly different to theirs. And some of them were quite aghast at the thought of us voting at 16. You know, I think about my son. In the last general election, he was unable to vote. He was 5 months off of being 18. And for the next 4 or 5 years, there would be a government in that he had no say, no conversation in. We ask and we allow our kids to join the armed forces at 16. We allow them to pay taxes if they're in a full-time job. We allow them to have consensual sex. So to me, why shouldn't they get to vote on the politics that they want to decide for the country they want to be in?
I completely agree. And what do you aim to make our future community look like, and what will you do to make that change come true?
I often say, when people ask me these types of questions, and I go back to my my son who's in the Navy. He is 23 years old. He's just moved in with his girlfriend who's also in the Navy, and she's from Yorkshire. So I now am in a very fast pace to make sure that my grandchildren, should I be lucky enough to have any, do not move to Yorkshire, that they want to stay here, that we have a city that gives housing for our young people and families, provides good places for people to go, provides good job opportunities, and is just a brilliant place to be. And when you're competing with the Yorkshire Dales, that's not an easy feat. So really, if it's, and he's you know, he's from Portsmouth, he loves the city, but if it's not good enough for him to want to stay, then in my opinion it's not good enough for anyone to stay. So that's what I would like to do. And then how do you do it? I have a habit of just lobbying ministers. I talked about voting when we're in the voting corridors at night time, and sometimes you can have 7 or 8 votes. And in between those votes, you've got secretaries of state, you've got ministers. So I always go with my list of ministers to grab in the lobby to say, what are you doing about this? And, oh, where's Portsmouth flooding money? Or what are we doing about housing? What are we doing about homeless people in Portsmouth? What are we doing about education? And Matthew Pennycook, who is the minister in MCHLG, so he's in charge of housing, essentially, and he now just runs when he sees me coming. He is like, you are my most repeat offender. And he says, I know that you're a teacher, Amanda, and if I'd been a head teacher, you would definitely be on my wall. And I was like, then I'm proud about that, because you don't get anywhere without asking. So,
I love that. Can I just build on that? What about in Portsmouth North in particular? What's giving you hope and excitement for the future of Portsmouth North?
Well, I think there's a number of things. I think there are people in this room that hear me say this all the time, and I know that my colleague Stephen Morgan is pretty fed up of me saying it, but whenever we go anywhere, and even like I go to the university and even the 100 event, I said, you do realise it's Portsmouth, not Portsmouth South. Like, there is another part of this city, and I've lived in that part of my city. And, you know, when my kids were little, we always had to get on the bus to go down the south to do something. And actually, to me, it's about regenerating all parts of our city. I'm excited about the Lido. I think the Pride in Place money for Paulsgrove is absolutely amazing. And when the minister phoned me and said we were getting, I actually burst out crying. My mum and dad were born in Paulsgrove. My mum and dad got married in that church. My grandparents' funerals and I did their eulogies were in that church. And it's been a place many of my family live, and they've been surveyed in so many great initiatives, and this £20 million of £2 million a year just gives us a real chance to put some pride in that place. People there are very, very proud people, but actually let's just give them something else to feel that pride. And the best thing about it is it's community are deciding how that money is going to be spent.
Do you often feel like people in Paulsgrove feel left behind?
Yeah, I think people in the north feel left behind. Like in the north of the city, especially if you're off the island, you do feel a bit left out. And you know, I feel it's my job to be kind of the ambassador of that part of the city. I mean, the city as a whole, because I'm extremely proud of this place. And I said to my my office, because a lot of MPs stand in front of the Christmas tree and do like the State of the Nation Christmas tree address, and I was like, I don't really want to do that. I said, oh, you don't need to. We've already done a video. And it essentially is me saying Portsmouth about 50 times in different places. And it's, I think there's never a question in Parliament of where I'm from. absolutely. And I think, you know, it's always like, oh yeah, we know where you're from. And they just cut together a video of me in Parliament at events, just and the word Portsmouth just being said. And yeah, I'm truly passionate about it. And yeah, particularly the North, I think that we really need to make sure that we are one city. And I think the 100 years gives us a chance. I think the City of Culture gives us a chance to do that if we're lucky enough to win that bid as well.
Amazing. We might have to get some Portsmouth 100 flags for you to distribute in the voting chamber. Maheep?
What topics are you most passionate about in your role?
I think education, obviously being a teacher for 24 years, and then with that leads into things around not just education, early years and through our school system, but apprenticeships. My first Westminster Hall debate was elevating the status of trades and apprenticeships. And, you know, from there I've run... Well, I've changed the law, actually, which for a backbencher is pretty bloody amazing. I had a 10-minute rule bill on the 9th or the 9th of December, I think it was, the year before. And it was around basically tool theft. So right when I was campaigning, when I was elected, I met with Checker Trade and some tradespeople. And it was you know, really obvious that tool theft was a crime that doesn't just take their tools, takes their livelihoods. If your laptop's stolen, you know, you pretty much are backed up and you can get those things. But if your tools are your trade, you won't be able to, you can't work, it's your livelihood, it's your life. And so working with Checker Trade with another people called On The Tools and Fix Radio, who even knew there was a tradies radio station, but it's absolutely brilliant. Working with them, we looked to see, okay, what can we do in the sentencing? And I knew the sentencing bill was coming through, so it was a great opportunity to badger the Ministry of Justice and the Home Office. And so my 10-minute rule bill essentially just said, when you are sentencing somebody who's been convicted of stealing tools, you must take into account the full extent of the crime, the impact on their lives, the impact on their business, the impact on their reputation, the damage to their van. And... it went a step further than that. So not only, it was a bit of a tough thing. A sentencing counsel wrote back to me and said, we don't need that, Amanda, we already can do that. I said, yes, but you don't. And then we wrote to the Judicial College and said, you're not training your judges properly because this is what you can do, this is what you're not doing. And in the end, after lots of to-ing and fro-ing, we had a brilliant reception in Parliament where we had the pool guy, if anyone's on TikTok, he's like pretty amazing, but he's had his tools nicked 3 times. We had the builder from Stacey Solomon's Sort Your Life Out again. He's had his tools done 2 times. And people just advocating for the campaign. And then in the sentencing bill, I was called in to the Ministry of Justice by the then Justice Secretary Shabana Mahmood. She's now in the Home Office, which is great because my second part of my campaign is about the Home Office putting on tool theft. And basically said, Manda, we're not just going to change it for tool theft. We think what you're doing is exactly right. So what we're now going to do is judges now must take into account when they are sentencing the full extent of victims' crime. Not just should, but must. And then in addition to that, she said, we've also listened to your extent of... you know, some people will only go to prison for 2 years. What's the probation service? What are they learning? Actually, can we have proper tagging? Can we look at no restriction zones? Can we restrict people from going to concerts, festival, football matches? With the technology we've got, actually being able to watch like Netflix, those kind of things. And so that is also within it as well, which means you can see that justice. So to me, that was just fantastic. And for a backbencher to do that is very rare. But it hasn't made me stop. I'm now on the motion of a full tool theft database because that was got rid of by the last government. So even if your tools are nicked, you can't find them back to yourself. We've pushed really heavily and we've just had somebody in the National Crime Agency who is now in charge of construction crime. I'm sitting on the construction crime board. So yeah, really be an advocate for tradespeople.
Amazing. Just in the interest of time, I think we'll just wrap up with our final question, if that's okay. And I'm going to encourage you to try and keep it to a sentence or two, if that's okay. What one piece of advice would you give to young people of Portsmouth? And there's plenty of them in this room, who are, I can see them nodding at me. We've got more than, nearly 20 members of our youth cabinet. What one piece of advice would you give to young people of Portsmouth that are stepping forward and that want to follow in your path and drive change for this city?
Well, I love Portsmouth, and I think my opinion would be use what this city gives you. This city gives you resilience, it gives you passion, it gives you community, and it gives you character. And whether you choose to stay in this city, whether you choose to go away and work, go away and study, go away and travel, move somewhere else because of different relationships, or whether you choose to go and come back, use what this city gives you, that pride within you. Be proud of where you're from, always, and be kind, and work hard. Like, definitely work hard. You don't get anywhere without working hard. But I would also say, finally, smile. Be able to smile at other people and laugh at yourself. Don't take yourself too seriously. But my biggest thing would be, take this city with you in your heart so that you know it's a great place.
Love that. Ladies and gentlemen, could we put our hands together for our fabulous panel?
This podcast was brought to you by Shaping Portsmouth, working to make Portsmouth the number one UK city in which to invest, live, learn, work and visit. To find out more, please visit shapingportsmouth.co.uk. This podcast was supported by Spark Community Space and Portsmouth Community Lottery.